the House program, just beginning here, spent a couple hours talking about that special place that you and I call home. We're glad you're with us. We'll be here from now until 1 to 3, our normal time, and we're delighted that you're with us. Thanks for sharing your weekend with us here on the Around the House program. Give us a call, 719-473-1240, 473-1240. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Ken Moon, and we've been doing this now going on 30 years on a Saturday. It makes my week. I love it that you're with me, and that you will, you know, I get a lot of good email, as I do every week, to go over here as the show unfolds. But we'd love to hear from you. 719-473-1240. Let's see. Observations. This is an unsigned email that I wanted to share with you. These are just random observations about how silly and crazy life is, and a little some of these are a little edgy, if you will, but they're kind of fun. I think you might enjoy these. Number one, food has replaced sex in my life. Now I can't even get into my own pants. Number two, the closest I ever got to a 4.0 in school was my blood alcohol content. I like that. Marriage changes passion. Suddenly, you're in bed with a relative. I saw a woman wearing a T-shirt with guests on it. So I said, implants? I don't do drugs anymore because I find I get just the same effect by simply standing up fast. Let's see. I have my own little world, but it's okay. They know me here. I like that one. Money can't buy happiness, but it sure makes misery easier to live with. Yeah. If flying is so safe, why do they call the airport the terminal? I never thought about that. I don't approve of political jokes. I've seen too many of them get elected. A couple more of these. There are two sides to every divorce, yours and Butthead's. I like that. Let's see. I love being married. It's so great to find that one special person you want to annoy for the rest of your life. Shopping tip. This is a good one, Chris. You can get shoes for 85 cents at the bowling alley. How about that, huh? I am a nobody, and nobody is perfect. Therefore, a priori, I'm perfect. I'm a nobody, nobody's perfect, therefore I'm perfect. How about that? How can we choose from just two people to run for president and 50 for Miss America? Do they still have the Miss America pageant? I guess they do, huh?
Yeah.
It's not as big a deal as it used to be. It used to be a huge deal, didn't it? Now it's probably considered a little marginally sexist or something, right? Anyway. Oh, I like this one. Why is it that most nudists are people you don't want to see naked? And finally, every time I walk into a singles bar, I can hear my mom's wise words. Don't pick that up. You don't know where it's been. I like that one. Anyway, good to have you with us here on the Around the House program, 719-473-1240. I wish I could. It's signed with a kind of a phony email address, so I can't really give the person credit, but I thought that was kind of, a lot of people send me that, those lists, which I kind of enjoy. 719-473-1240. We've had a lot of hail around, right? Here and there and everywhere. I've heard reports of golf ball, baseball-sized hail south of town and out in the Peyton Falcon area, and I'm sure many of you are involved with your insurance companies. A couple of things about when your roof's been hailed on. You'll have a lot of roofers come and bang on your door, perhaps, ring your doorbell. You want to probably avoid those. Many of them may be out-of-state storm-chasing companies, and you can usually tell because they have out-of-state license plates, of course. And some of them will co-opt or borrow, even buy, the name of a local roofing company and put a magnetic sign on their truck. So out-of-state plates, magnetic signs, probably a good indicator that you're dealing with a non-local person. So I would probably get a referral from a neighbor or a friend. We have good sponsors here like Petrolli Roofing on the station that do a nice job. So, you know, be careful whom you choose to get a new roof with. And here's the thing. Your insurance company, your relationship with your insurance company is a business private relationship. There's no reason for you to show any kind of an estimate money estimate from your insurance company to a prospective roofer. What you simply want to do is get their best price. Give me your best price and I'll get back to you. That kind of thing. Roofing companies, many of them, will want to see your insurance estimate. And guess what? They spend all the money. So if you want to show it to them, white it out and Xerox it so they don't see the money amounts. But that relationship between you and your insurance company is a private relationship. How much money you get from your insurance company is nobody's business but yours. And beware of people who want to come up with a phony estimate so you don't have to pay your deductible. Those are all folks to avoid, okay? You want to deal with a reliable local company, arm's length. It's just another business transaction as if you were hiring a painter or electrician or a plumber. Many roofers have pushed back on that little speech I just gave by saying, well, you know, we want to do all the things that the owner's getting paid for, whatever extra flashing and whatever extra roof jacks and skylight treatments and things. We want to make sure that we do everything the insurance company has specified. In that case, as I say, you can white out the dollar amounts and show those estimates with no money figures on them to the new roofing company. But go slow, be careful, and get a couple of bids. And if your roof is not leaking, you have plenty of time to get it replaced. There's no big rush. If it's leaking, that's a different thing, and you'll have to behave accordingly in terms of getting relief by putting tarps on, some kind of temporary waterproofing. But in most cases, hail damage does not necessarily make a roof leak, so there's no rush on it. Take your time when you pick a roofer. It used to be 6 months to get this resolved with your insurance company. I think that may have increased to a year. I'll have to check that, but you got plenty of time to get an estimate from one or two roofing companies. But pick people you've heard of, like people that advertise here on the radio station, and you'll be fine. 719-473-1240 is our contact line. If you have sump pump issues, those are settling down a little bit because the rains have not been as intense the last week or 10 days as they have been in the past. But if you have any kind of water issues, damp, wet crawl spaces, you can check in with us here. I looked at a house yesterday that had a sump pump pit in the basement. It's a 7-year-old house. And I looked down, and there's a sump pump down in the bottom of this about 10-foot shaft. You know, the sump pump pit itself is about 8 to 10 feet deep, which is plenty. There's a French drain around the house dumping water into the sump pump pit. But there's this sad little rusty pump at the bottom with about 2 feet of water on top. So right away, of course, I knew the sump pump wasn't working. So it's a good time for me to remind you that if you have a sump pump at your house, make sure you exercise it a couple times a year. Adding water with a hose or you can fill up a 5-gallon paint bucket with water, whatever it takes to get the sump pump started to discharge water is important, because pumps that don't get regular exercise, so to speak, get rusty and corroded, and then when you need them, they don't work. So make sure you exercise your sump pump a couple times a year. This owner had not been paying attention. This is an occupied home and not been paying attention. They were lucky because the water, even though there was 2 feet of water or so on top of this pathetic sump pump, which wasn't working, that was way below the level of the basement floor. But you want to make sure your sump pump is operable, because when you need it, you need it. And you don't want water coming in your basement, especially with a finished basement. 719-473-1240 and live email at aroundthehouse.com. We'll be right back right here on Around the House. Give us a call.
Need help with your next home project? Back to Around the House with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 20 minutes after the hour on the Around the House program. We'd love to hear from you today, whatever's going on. We have an email here from Nancy, and this is a pretty common thing. It's common at my house, actually. My ice maker is producing cubes that taste funny. What might be going on? Well, if you don't use your ice maker all that much, food odors can just contaminate the ice cubes, whether they're the odors. Usually they're from the refrigerator side, the fresh food side, but they can be in the freezer also, especially if you're maybe you're storing frozen shrimp or some kind of fish in there, that sort of thing. So I would deodorize the refrigerator. There's lots of ways to do that. A box of baking soda open, which is the tried and true method. Plain charcoal briquettes, not the kind with the fuel soaked into them, but plain charcoal briquettes will work. There are stick-on deodorizers. I haven't seen these in a while. I think they still make them. Arm & Hammer is one brand that put the box of baking soda on the market. Stick-on deodorizers for the inside of your refrigerator. That's one cause. But having fresh ice cubes, there's no substitute for that. So if you're like I live by myself, so I don't use all that much ice. So make only small batches of ice cubes. That's a big deal. Don't get the whole ice maker box full of ice cubes that might, if you just did normal usage, might take you a month or so to use. Just every 10 days or so, make a batch of ice cubes, and they'll stay a lot fresher. So use it. But if you have a big family, of course, and a bunch of teenagers getting soft drinks all the time, of course, they just get recycled, and that's fine. But that's kind of why ice. I don't think there's anything wrong with your refrigerator. It's just that they're just lingering too long in an environment that just has, frankly, some food odors in the environment inside the refrigerator. I did my promo for this week. We run little 15-second promos about the program on the radio stations, and this fits in with an email I got. That's why I did it. Deb said, "What should I do this time of year to my evaporative cooler?" Evaporative cooler is a foo-foo way of saying swamp cooler, right? Or all the way around. Which is it, Chris? Anyway, and this is funny. I got an email also yesterday from a listener named Sarah, who wondered if she had hard water, but she wasn't really sure. And I said, "Well, why do you think you have hard water?" "Because the inside of my swamp cooler is full of minerals and calcified, you know, chunks of white, salty minerals." And this is a little sidebar here. I emailed Sarah back and said, "Listen, humidifiers and swamp coolers are intentionally designed to evaporate water. And when you evaporate water, whether it's hard or soft water, you're going to get calcified minerals accumulating." So that's not a big deal. Now, Sarah may have hard water. You can test it yourself. You can get test kits at the home center hardware store. 7 grains of hardness. The grains of hardness measure the calcium and magnesium ions that we replace with sodium when we use a water softener, but you may or may not have hard water, Sarah. But again, go back to this initial email here about what to do this time of year to start before you start the swamp cooler. It just needs a good cleaning. You'll just need to scrub out the minerals we just talked about, dirt and dust, which blows into your swamp cooler. Anytime, if you want to get rid of the salty residue, the calcified mineral deposits inside, good old white vinegar works pretty well with a scrub brush. You just have to kind of scrub it all out and use a hose to blast out what the loose material. There'll be loose, salty type material in there, as well as blown in dust and grit from the surroundings. And you can just blast that out with a hose, scrub with vinegar and water and a stiff bristle, like a floor brush, or even a brush that you would use to scrub out pots and pans. You get the idea. Whatever it takes to get it all squeaky clean inside. And you may have rust and corroded spots in your evaporative cooler. If it's a steel one, if it's a metal one, you want to treat those. You want to scrub those out and maybe put a little metal primer on those and let it dry really well before you start using the evaporative cooler, so you don't get any paint odors in the house. But that's kind of all you need to do, is just give it a good scrubbing. But then you need to replace the evaporator pads. And these are usually ground up wood fibers. I think aspen is a common wood used for that. Avoid getting so-called permanent evaporator pads in your evaporative cooler. These are usually a foam, plastic foam-like material. They're a little pricey, and they just don't stay clean after the first year's use. So you want to put brand new pads in your evaporative cooler. If you use it a lot, you want to replace them maybe halfway through the cooling season. Let this new batch of pads go 6 to 8 weeks and then replace them. Many people just do it once a year, and that's fine, but you'll have to see how dirty it gets, so to speak, with the minerals from the water and, you know, and all the pollution that can blow inside. If there are lubrication cups on the motor that drives the fan in your evaporative cooler, you can squeeze a little light oil into those to kind of get it lubricated for another season. Here's something that you may not have, Deb, that I wanted to have you investigate. You can do this on Amazon or wherever you'd like online. A bleed-off kit installed on your evaporative cooler is a good idea. It's a little hose arrangement that it's a little complicated, and I can't describe it totally on the radio, but trust me, it purges a little water each time the pump runs. It actually purges it from the system to prevent scale and algae from accumulating in the water. So the water is always fresher. You're not stuck with a given reservoir of water that lasts and lasts and has time to build up bacteria and algae and scale in it. That means less odor, less allergens, and like mold spores and things will get in the house. They're usually $20 or so, but look online for an evaporative cooler. I don't think it'll say swamp. I think it'll say evaporative cooler purge kit it wastes a little water. I know, that's fine. But what it does, it freshens the water, and you're not going to have the issues with stinky water and contaminated water so much. You'll have maybe a little bit of that, but it'll be a lot fresher than you're used to with your evaporative cooler. So I hope that's helpful to you. Yeah, just got to get it nice and clean. Same with the humidifier. We'll go to the opposite end of the calendar 6 months from now or just a few months from now in the fall. Again, you need to scrub humidifiers out because they'll be full of minerals and dust and all kinds of contaminants from a season of evaporating water in your humidifier. You scrub those out the same way with white vinegar and then put a new pad in there. Also, you can buy evaporative pads that go in your humidifier online for, I have April Air humidifier. I usually get them for about $15 for two of them, so it lasts me 2 years. So it's the same circumstances as you have with a swamp cooler in a humidifier, only it's smaller, of course, but you're evaporating water, which leaves minerals behind. No matter how soft the water is, you're always going to have residual whether it's dust particles or scale or calcification on the inside parts of your evaporative cooler. That just comes with the territory, so to speak, because you just leave, when you evaporate water, you leave all those, that salty residue behind. 719-473-1240 is our contact line right here on Around the House, and live email at the aroundthehouse.com website. We'll be right back. Well, I got a very sweet email from a listener named Kathy. I love your show, and I get a really lot of good information from it. I was looking for a company for my heating and air conditioning needs because the company I started out with now have switched to kind of high-pressure techniques. And so she tried Click Heating and Air, thanks to my advertising here on the show. Kathy says, Click did not try to sell me anything, and the guy they sent out was very nice. Thankfully, thanks to you, I found a great company. Well, Kathy, I appreciate it. I know Jim at Overclick appreciates that also. It's a good company. Just sell you what you need when you need it. They don't try to push you into expensive parts and labor that you don't need because they want you long-term. They have a special deal, $59 to get your AC checked for the summer season ahead. And if it's time for a new furnace, you can get an AC and furnace installed for a great discount, $2,000 off if you mention this commercial. Click Heating and Air. Give them a call, 719-782-5425.
Break around the house. That's why there's the Around the House program with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 25 minutes before the hour in the Around the House program. Nice to have you with us on this gorgeous day. Hello, a shout out to all of our listeners in Casper, KTWO. The show is time shifted in Casper. It's on at the old time, 4 o'clock, but that's fine. We're glad you're with us. If you want to check in with us here on the phone, it's we are on the air 1 o'clock Mountain Time, live 1 to 3. But we're grateful to KTWO for carrying the program. So hello, Casper, and most that's pretty much all of Wyoming. It's a big signal, 50,000 watts up there, covers the state kind of like a blanket, and we're happy that they're with us. Dave wants to know, what do you think of those deck ceilings to keep out the water down below? I guess Dave's been rained on lately. And these below deck systems are pretty good. I don't know if you've seen them. You can see examples online. They're usually corrugated vinyl or aluminum sheeting. It's kind of hung underneath the deck at an angle, so it becomes like a giant flat gutter system that picks up water that falls through the deck and carries it down the sheets and dumps it into some kind of a little collector gutter on the outside edge or whatever. There are many brands of these, and they're all about the same. So that allows you to store stuff under your deck, like your barbecue grill, your patio furniture, lawnmowers, maybe snow blowers, whatever you want to keep. But it keeps the weather off of whatever's below the deck. One brand, and I haven't checked this for a long time, was called Dry Below, DRI-B-LO, I think. Chris, you want to check me on that? Something like that. They're a little pricey. To gain that extra storage area, maybe a 12x12 area under the deck might be worth it when you consider, the alternative of having to build a shed or having no protection at all. I've seen people do a homemade version of these where they put a little roof under the deck, like they, like a waterproof layer right under the deck joists themselves to get moisture away. Like, as I say, like a little roof. But the problem is that usually leads to mold and wood rot because the moisture is stuck up under the deck. It's too close. You can't get rid of it. It kind of hangs there in puddles and pools. The hanging system, on the other hand, that we just talked about, the corrugated a vinyl or metal system, is slanted, sloped down and away, so the water drains positively away from under the deck and allows the deck to breathe a little because these systems are hung a few inches under the bottom of the deck joists themselves. So, yeah, they work pretty well. You can check them out. I think you can find maybe roofers would do this. I'm not sure who installs these. I imagine even a handyman company could install these for you. So check that out. Dry Below. Did you find Dry Below, Chris?
Yeah.
How's it spelled?
You had it right.
Okay.
DRY-B-LOW.
I think I said DRI, but that's fine.
Yeah, DRY.
And it's you can see, did you find it at their site or somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Yeah. As I say, it's a little pricey. But to gain that storage space that you don't have, now is probably a pretty good trade-off for you. Let's see, 719-473-1240. John says, my sprinkler, and I have this in my house too, my sprinkler system has several heads that create a water pool underneath each head. What causes this? Well, the typical cause for the puddling or ponding around a sprinkler head is that the shaft isn't extending all the way through the valve body. You know, there's a little seal there. So when it's operating normally, that shaft pops up because of the water pressure, and there's a little rubber seal around there. So one of the things you can do is just simply clean them. There may be some sand or grit stuck in these in the head, so unscrew them. Now, when you unscrew up a sprinkler head, you got to be careful. Make sure you have a little sandwich bag with you to shove in the hole, so you don't get dirt dropping into that pipe. Then take it to the sink and wash it out really, really well. You may see sand and grit, and all of a sudden, it slips up and down easily. Make sure the hold up springs are in there normally, because they also assist in normal operation of the sprinkler head. But they do wear out, and sprinkler heads aren't very expensive. If a little TLC in the sink cleaning the grit and sand out doesn't work, then you just need to replace the head altogether. But that's a typical cause. Now, I'm not considering the fact that you might have an actual leak. I mean, that's much rarer. There's usually an elbow or some kind of there's an extender, a little shaft or an extension pipe that sticks up. You screw the head into it, and that's, you know, that riser, it's called a riser. Sometimes they can leak. Sometimes the fitting directly below the riser, which might be an elbow or a T, that can leak also. In that case, you got to get out the old shovel, pop the sod up, and expose the underlying piping. But usually ponding is, as I said, just because the sprinkler head is not operating as it was intended to, and that seal doesn't get to do its good work to keep it sealed and to keep the water where it belongs, which is spraying out onto your lawn. 719-473-1240 is our phone number. Let's see. Rose says, my hardwood floors aren't looking too good lately. Can I apply Minwax or Old English to brighten them up? I don't think no shortcuts here. I don't think you'll like the results, Rose. Anything you apply that has either an oily or filmy residue, even Murphy's oil soap, as an example, will attract dust and dirt and look filmy and dingy in no time. So maybe it's time to actually refinish the floors. And I know it's a little pricey, more than you want to spend. But if you know, I use a wet Swiffer on my hardwood. I don't do it. I have a lady that comes in and I pay her to do it. But wet Swiffer seems to work nice on my hardwood floor, gets it nice and shiny, and gets all the dirt and crud off of the floor, especially in the kitchen. But if that's not helping, then you know you probably need to get the floors refinished. It's not a huge deal. You may need to scratch up the surface a little bit. You know, they don't necessarily have to resand the whole floor, but sometimes it's a scratch and refinish with a wire kind of screen that they scratch off the old material, the polyurethane, and wipe it down really well, and then put a new top coat on, a polyurethane top coat. Ask about water-based. If you get your floors refinished, the water-based material is a little more expensive, but it dries very quickly and has much less odor than the traditional polyurethane. And everything I hear and read, it works just as well as the original polyurethane-based product. So when it's time to refinish, every 5 to 8 years, maybe 10 years, you need to refinish your hardwood floors, depending on kids and dogs and how much grit gets on the floor. You know, the floors get a lot of use, especially with heavy dogs and their claws and their kids running in and out with grit on their feet and that sort of thing. So when it's time to refinish, call the expert. Don't try to do it yourself. There's really nothing you can put on your hardwood floor that would be long-lasting and wouldn't introduce additional problems. That wet Swiffer has a little tiny bit of solvent in it, but does not leave a film. I'm told by people that use Murphy's oil soap that there is kind of a filmy residue that it leaves. Some people use a little tiny bit of white vinegar and a sponge mop. You could try that also. Again, it doesn't leave a film, but the Swiffer is so handy and so convenient. The wet Swiffer that I really, that's what we use at my house and works very, very well. So there you go. That's a good question. When it's time, though, sometimes it's just time. You'll see the finish start to wear off and the stain starts to disappear and bleed through the wood underneath. The wood color comes bleeding through. So, you know, when it's time, you got to bite the bullet. It's not terribly expensive, a buck to a buck and a half a square foot, something like that. But it is a little bit disruptive. You got to move the furniture around and, you know, you'll be out of the house because of the odor for a couple of days, maybe a day, maybe the first day in the overnight one day, and you can move back in the next. But anyway, if it's time to refinish, you got to do it. You got to bite the bullet and do that. 719-473-1240. We'll be right back right here on Around the House. Give us a call. You know, if you have ugly old windows, wood, steel, or aluminum windows from bygone decades, and you have central air, you're wasting energy just like you would be in the wintertime when it's cold outside. So I want you to call Dutch's Home Improvement. This is a company I know you've heard of. They've been around over 30 years now, has a great reputation, and they do windows, siding, doors, and patio covers. They do it all to give your house a facelift. But start with the windows. If you have old windows, maybe they have vapor between the glass panes and the frames are all messed up or been hailed on or something. Dutch's carries the best brands of new vinyl windows with the best installers in town. They have a great reputation, so give them a call, 719-392-1369 or dutcheshomeimprovement.com. They can give your house a facelift with new windows and siding and make it look younger than its actual age, and you'll be much happier to come home when you have a facelift on your house from Dutch's Home Improvement, 719-392-1369.
Fix-It videos can be so confusing. Let Ken Moon walk you through it on Around the House. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 11 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. I want to remind you about the podcast. You all are responding great to our podcast using the download feature. You can go to my website, aroundthehouse.com, and just click on Listen to Podcast. Takes you right in directly to the KRDO site. There's an outside vendor that stores our podcast. July 1 would be our 12th anniversary, right? Or 12-month anniversary. 1 year we've been doing this, and the podcasts are all there for you to enjoy, and you are downloading them like crazy, my program. And I appreciate that. So listen to podcasts aroundthehouse.com. And Chris will have this program up and ready for your dining and listening pleasure an hour or two after we go off the air. Here's kind of an esoteric question, but it's kind of interesting to me because I'm kind of into this structural stuff in houses. Apparently, Rick has an older house, because he says, when I look at my roof from down below, it looks a little wavy. I insulated the attic heavily with blown-in stuff about 10 years ago. Do you think that's what's going on? Probably not. Insulation is, first of all, it's not that heavy when it comes to, you know, pounds per cubic foot, that sort of thing. But extra weight in the attic is more likely to show up down below in the form of stress cracks in the drywall, or if you have a really old house, in the plaster. Wavy and saggy roofs in older houses are more common than you think. In the 60s, I'm winging it a little bit here, but in the early 60s or so, we started using pre-manufactured truss roofs system that were made. The trusses are actually manufactured in a shop at the lumberyard. But before that, and I remember this when I was a kid, we used hand-cut rafters. I remember my dad and my grandfather hand-cutting rafters on a sawhorse on the ground and lifting them up in place. We'd put those in place and nail them. Had no nail guns in those days. And that was the roof. There weren't trusses. They almost never failed. I'm very rare to have a roof actually collapse or fail, unless it's something really extraordinary. But after decades of snow load, winter snow loads, some sagging might occur. It can be the fault of the rafters, or it can be a fault of the plywood that they used on the roof. We were allowed to use 3/8-inch plywood back 30, 40, 50 years ago, which is unbelievable if you think about it now. And so that thin plywood and the old rafters sometimes will show up as a slight dip in the roof, 16 inches apart or 24 inches apart, depending on the roof framing. So if these wavy, Rick, if these wavy areas look uniform, like they look like they're the same distance apart, usually 2 feet or 16 inches, it's not a big deal. It's a normal aging process of a roof. It's not going to fail. And however, if there's a single dip spot, especially around where two roofs come together and make kind of a valley, that's typical. If you see a big sagging area there, now that can be more serious. That can be a broken rafter. And again, this does happen. It usually happens in those valley areas. So if that's the case, if it's a single kind of a significant dip in the roof, you want to get that looked at. You don't want to just let it go. So a home inspector or a small contractor can sneak up in the attic and check it out for you. They're easily fixed. It's not a huge deal to fix those. You would have to sister in another rafter alongside what you have now. So it's not a deal. But you got to get those single ones. That can indeed collapse in a big snowstorm, and then you have a big leak and a mess and all that. So get those taken care of. But that uniform waviness on the roof shingles of an older home is not that uncommon. And when I say older home, homes built, you know, in round numbers from the 50s or earlier, okay? 719-473-1240 and live email at the aroundthehouse.com website. Just click on the second button from the left and I'll see the email right here in the studio. Jeff says we have a crawl space, and this is pretty timely. We have a crawl space that seems musty and promotes mildew. We'd like to use it for a storage area. Should we use a plastic layer and some sort of wood over that? Yeah, you should. You don't want to store directly on the ground if it's moist in there, and that's what musty smell means. There's extra moisture in your crawl space, especially this time of year. It's very common to have moisture in a crawl space. But I would work before storage. I would work probably on more ventilation first. You need exterior vents open to the outside world in your crawl space. And many times those vents will get blocked up. People will build a deck across them and not provide additional ventilation, just block them up. So we lose that effect of a cross breeze in the crawl space. And if that happens, then, or if the crawl space vents aren't kept open this time of year in the summertime, then that's where this extra moisture comes from, and the mold and mildew and maybe dry rot fungus on the structural undercarriage of the house. So once you've kind of re-ventilated the crawl space, then you can think about storage. And when I say re-ventilated, I mean you may have to add some crawl space vents. In the typical house, in my head, I'm thinking of an older ranch-style home with a full crawl space. I usually see 4 to maybe up to 8 crawl space vents in those crawl space areas, and they're opposite each other, like the front and the back of the house. So you get that cross ventilation, especially in the rainy time of the year, which we're in. We're no doubt about it. We're in it right now. So open the crawl space vents. If you don't have any or have maybe just only a couple, you see if you can add 2 or 4 more to get more ventilation in there. You can even hang a one of these inexpensive box fans in the crawl space to move the air around, and it'll dry out and the house will smell better. Once you've done that, Then you can add a layer of plastic sheeting. There's 6 mil plastic sheeting. Some people call it Visqueen. I like the, you can get it in clear or black. I like the black. Put it right over the dirt. But make sure the crawl space dirt is not wet to the touch. If it's damp and or cool, that's okay. Even with the plastic sheeting on your crawl space dirt, I encourage you to use some wooden pallets to store valuables, a little air circulation underneath. If you don't want to do that, then I would use the plastic bins you get at Walmart and other discount stores for storage. If you have a bunch of cardboard boxes and you want to keep things in there, get the pallets in there. Sometimes you can get free pallets at the lumber yard. You'll have to check me on that, or at Home Depot or Lowe's. But plastic, then pallets, then your cardboard, and you'll be okay. Make sure the cardboard boxes are set away from the walls, 3 or 4 inches, to get some air circulation behind there. But if you really want to be foolproof about storing your valuables, then you want to use the plastic tubs because they are invincible when it comes to damp environments. So thanks for that. Thanks for that email. This time of year, crawl spaces tend to get a little dicey, don't they? A little stinky, and it seeps up into the house itself. So air circulation is a big deal in your crawl space. That's it for part one. We'll be back with part two. I've got an interesting piece from the Wall Street Journal about Washington starting to knock dams down and which produce electricity. So we'll talk about that. And anything else, a lot of good email from this week, right after the news, right here on Around the House. After the hour, part two of Around the House. Nice to have you with us. I hope you'll give us a call. We'd love it to interface with you, whatever's going on around that special place that you call home, 719-473-1240. I'm just thinking, Chris, is a week from today is July 1, right? Another month in the books. And Chris is going to be gone the next 2 weeks or 1 week? 2 weeks on a well-deserved vacation. And speaking of that, I tried to get John Creddy, our Gardening with an Altitude horticultural buddy and dear friend of mine, next week. He wants to do the week after, so July 8th, he'll be on the air with us talking about summer gardening, which is a little easier this year. Weeds come out easier when it rains a lot, doesn't it? For those of you, raise your hand if you have weeds in your yard, right? Anyway, so we'll miss Chris for the next couple of weeks, but you'll have a lot of fun watching some baseball, right?
Yep.
How many major league games did you get to see?
I got at least two, but I'm going to also see some minor league games and some college summer leagues games.
Very nice,
as well.
Very nice. And you and I haven't talked for a while. But we had just as the season started, we were talking about the pitch clock. Even actually in preseason, talking about the pitch clock, and it seems to have worked out well, hasn't it?
Yeah, about 25, 30 minutes quicker.
Yeah, on the average, games. About 30 minutes. Yeah, and it just seems to move a little more smoothly, and they have that little logo at the bottom. You can kind of watch it count down. Have there been many violations? Probably more pitchers than batters, I suppose.
Well, more times than often. We recently had the Rockies game where actually there were like three violations, which was almost strange. It was two pitch violations and one batter violation.
Yeah, so. I'm sure the umpire calls that on the field, or they – yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, if the – batter isn't in the batter's box by 9 seconds, he can get that violation there. Also,
and that's what they call a strike?
Yes.
Okay.
And then if the pitcher doesn't get the pitch off by the time the clock hits zero, then the ball.
It's a ball. Right. So is it 10 seconds or how many seconds on each?
15 seconds when there's no runners on base, 20 when there is a runner on base.
Okay, very, very good. Yeah, but if it's tightened up the games, I think that's probably good. The fans like it, and probably it'll benefit the game long term.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
Hope so, yeah. That we used to, one of the parts of the Major League, one of the aspects that Major League used to brag about. This is, we're the only sport with no time clock. Well, and that was true because it made the games more leisurely and more fun, but they got out of hand, didn't it?
Yeah, so. When you got games over 4 hours, that's not fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, thanks. Chris is a huge sports, but big-time baseball fan. The Rockies are, what, 17 out? And by the break, it'll probably be 20-ish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What else is new, right?
Mm-hmm.
719-473-1240. One of my crusades has been, and if you've listened to the show in the last 6 or 8 months, is the sort of dichotomy, if you will, or the cognitive dissonance, holding two ideas that are opposed to each other, and wanting the government wanting us to buy electric cars, get rid of gas stoves, get rid of gas furnaces, gas dryers, gas water heaters, while at the same time closing power plants and wanting us to rely on this nonsensical solar and wind, which are unreliable. So we close the power plant in downtown Colorado Springs, which has been there over 100 years, and then we suddenly have to build 6 new gas turbine plants right on the same property to sort of, not totally, but partially take their place. So close power plants, less electricity generation, and use more electricity. I cannot get my head around it because it's crazy. That's the only word for it. Well, here's another one. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Biden's fishy plan to breach the Snake River dams. The administration's committed to destroying 4 hydroelectric dams on the Snake River in southeastern Washington state. Given the energy crisis in America, and this is, we talked about this several months ago, 2/3 of the U.S. risking electricity outages this summer, including almost everybody west of the Mississippi, according to the reliability folks in the electric industry. It's a strange time to remove 3,000 megawatts of hourly capacity from the grid. Still, the administration announced on March 21st that it's determined to bring healthy and abundant salmon runs back to the Colorado River system. He meant Columbia River, but that's the least of Biden's malaprops or misspoken phrases, I guess. He meant Columbia, not Colorado. So the article starts out by telling us salmon are more important than people. So here we go. Wall Street Journal again. Environmentalists concerned about salmon spawning have wanted to undam the Snake River for decades. They've especially targeted 4 dams on the lower part just before it joins the Columbia. Hydroelectric generators at these dams produce enough electricity to power 800,000 homes. So it would require roughly 3 million solar panels occupying well over 6,000 acres to replace that generation capacity, and they only work at night, in case you know didn't know that. In the 1950s, almost 130,000 Chinook salmon, sockeyes, and steelheads swam up the Columbia to the Snake in the spring to spawn. By 1992, that had dropped to just 10,000, In 2000, the NOAA announced that removing the 4 dams would bring the salmon back. Since then, however, improved fish ladders has allowed fish passage, try saying that quickly, to increase. So now it's not as big a deal, but they want to take the dams out anyway. Often portrayed by environmentalists as a uniquely fragile population, the Snake River salmon are unexceptional, according to a 2020 study by a Canadian consultant. In fact, Snake River salmon are hardy during migration. They do as well or better than salmon on undammed rivers in the American West. So removing 4 dams and wondering how we're going to replace that electricity is a big deal. The House, because the Republicans control it now, seem to be stalling on this a little bit. 2 or 3 representatives on the Wildlife and Fisheries Committee sent a letter to NOAA demanding an explanation for turning against the dams. Funding for the dam breaching would come out of Congress, and GOP is starting to wake up to what a disaster that would be. But Democrats are sure to try to again when the political stars align. We need to breach the lower dams, Mr. Biden said, to protect the livelihoods of people who depend on them, like the family farms, outdoor recreation businesses, and rural communities. These are precisely the people, says the Wall Street Journal, who will suffer the most if the dams are removed. The loss of reliable power would cause blackouts, and the addition of new trucking and train infrastructure to haul the grain, which normally would go down the river on the barges, would cause pollution in the communities of southeastern Washington. So there's always trade-offs, and a lot of wheat comes out of this part of the country. The removal of the dams, ship passages would make it less navigable, so we'll have to put the wheat on the roads in trucks, and there's more pollution. So trade-off this and trade-off that. But the point is, we need more electricity, not less. And the fact that we're doing it just the opposite is just craziness. And I cannot, as I say, get my head around that, because as we've talked about many times, power is life. Power means water, food, cellular phones, transportation, communication. And to jeopardize the power grid, you do it, at a big risk to the citizens of the country, and I'm not sure they're appreciating the risks, because solar and wind will not do the trick. They're a good backup, but that's all they are. We need reliable baseload power, and we're getting rid of it day by day. 719-473-1240, time for a break after my little monologue there, and we'll be back with your phone calls and email right after this.
Fix-it problem at your house? Ken Moon is here to help. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
It's 20 minutes after the hour on the Around the House program. 719-473-1240, as Laura said, and live email at aroundthehouse.com. That live email works not just during the show, but during the week, too, if you want to send me an email. That's fine. I'm usually get them answered fairly quickly after they come in, but for sure by the next day. So if you want to set up a little email dialogue, that would be fine. Just go to aroundthehouse.com, click second button from the left, which I think says Contact Ken, as I remember, and a little icon there, and I'll see it, and I'll answer it rather quickly. I think you'll be pleased. I try to get back to those, as I say, within a few hours of when they come in. Let's see. Will says, you said that it is cheaper to dry clothes with natural gas than electricity. Does that apply to propane as well? Yeah, it does. You can dry several loads of clothes with either natural gas or propane for a single load powered by electricity. Why that gap? Well, it's easy to explain. Electricity, even that generated by gas, which is more and more every day as we close coal plants down, it has to be shipped to your house over expensive transmission systems with transformers and wire and step-up and step-down transformers and a lot of infrastructure. Gas, on the other hand, comes through relatively inexpensive pipelines. And as fracking becomes more and more ubiquitous, it's going to get probably overall long-term get cheaper. Gas dryers are more expensive to buy, of course, you know that. But they amortize the cost rather quickly because of this savings. And you want to jump on this. If it's time to get a new dryer at your house, you know, the government's making noises about getting rid of gas appliances. Why? I can't imagine, because they are much more energy efficient and are easier on the budget of folks with maybe poorer folks that have less disposable income. But they want to get rid of them. Gas stoves, gas dryers, gas water heaters, gas furnaces, they all want to disappear in spite of what they, in spite of disavowing that. That's the plan. So I would buy a gas dryer before they outlaw them, or they become terribly expensive. Because before they outlaw these appliances, as they are starting to do with furnaces, they'll make requirements that make them a lot more expensive. Like the new furnace regulations proposed require us to go from today's 80% efficient to 95% efficient, so they'll become a lot more expensive. So if it's time to buy a new dryer, Will, I would get a gas dryer like right now. Gas dryers are a little unique. All dryers, of course, electric or gas, exhaust a lot of air outdoors. Because that's how they dry the clothes, you want to make sure that that dryer exhausts directly outdoors to the closest outdoor area through your dryer vent. But there's an additional requirement when you have a gas dryer. It uses oxygen to burn the natural gas, and so you need extra air in the laundry room because you don't want to deprive the gas flames of oxygen, and you want that air to flow through the dryer so it'll dry clothes more quickly and more efficiently. So you got to leave the laundry room door ajar when you dry clothes, but and this is whether you're using electric or gas, but it's more important with gas, as I indicated. But a much more convenient way to do that, and this is not the case in most older homes, is to put a little grill, a permanent grill to let fresh air into the laundry room. It's called a transfer grill, and it's easy to do yourself. You just would cut the drywall above the laundry room door on both sides of the wall, and put those white-colored grills that you see in furnace and heating systems, little tiny louvers in it, and that is a convenient way to get air into the laundry room whether the door is open or closed. That way you can close the door and keep the laundry noise from the washer and dryer out of the house, but still get sufficient air into the laundry area. And as I say, it's doubly important with a gas dryer because they have a need for oxygen to burn those gas flames. You don't want to deprive them because you can end up getting fumes and all kinds of problems with your gas dryer if you don't provide enough oxygen. Speaking of dryers, this is from Bev. Will, you want to make sure you get a propane dryer if you're on propane versus electric. Absolutely. But Bev said, where did I do that? I just had that here. Here it is right here. We're having trouble with our dryer vent. We have an older house and the pipe has lots of right angles and is fairly long. We can get a new shorter one installed for $350 or one with a booster fan for $500. What do you think? I would try the cheaper alternative first. Booster fans are fine if you really do need one. They have little interlocking controls that will shut things off if the fan fails. But it's a way to put a fan in the dryer duct to give it a little kick or a little boost if it's a really long run. Sometimes the city requires these if the outlet of the dryer vent is a long ways from the dryer itself. But I would try for the direct shot. Sometimes, Bev, it's just as easy to go through the roof. You may not be aware of this, but in most cases, dryer vents are horizontal. They go out to the nearest outside wall. Well, there's a way to run it up through the roof. It's a little more complicated, a little pricier, but many builders have switched to that because the builders are under these new rules. Well, not new now. They've been around for 10 or 15 years or so, give or take, that require the mechanical code requires a lot shorter run of dryer vent. The equivalent can be achieved by going straight up from the laundry room right through the roof, and that fulfills the requirement. The problem is that vertical dryer vents, although they work okay, they tend to plug up before horizontal vents because of gravity tugging on the moist, lint-laden air, if you will. But that's, Bev, that's another alternative to getting a straight shot out of your house outdoors. So if you really must use the booster fan, fine, but it's, as you indicate, a lot more expensive. And it... just another thing to fail, if you will. So I would try the shorter way. If they can do it horizontally, that would be my first choice rather than go out vertically. But either choice is available to you. 719-473-1240 is our telephone number.
I was just thinking about that with when you got like tri-level homes, I would think the if you have your dryer, washer and dryer up on the upper level of a tri-level home, I would think that roof vent would work a lot better there.
Absolutely.
But
yeah,
if you're down in the ground level near a basement, then probably going through the crawl space or the basement there to try and get through the vent that way.
Right. When you're in the second floor laundries are in tri-levels are more and more common. Mm-hmm. People want the laundry up where the clothes are, right? So yeah, you're close to the attic, go straight out the attic. That's a very typical thing. But a tri-level down on the third level where the family room is, going out through the front of the house sideways is a bit, or through the crawl space. But yeah, you're right. If you're up in that second level, you're so close to the attic, you might as well punch it out through the top. Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. Yeah, but rules, as I say, I'm thinking maybe it's more like 20 years now changed. And so the builders, of course, are constrained by this. The code changes. It affects builders right away. Us homeowners, not so much, because we have a grandfathered system. But if you have trouble with your dryer vent, going through the roof is the way to go. It's a little more time-consuming. You got to crawl in have the technician crawl in the attic, cut a hole in the roof. It's one more place to leak. But if you have to, you have to. My recommendation for cleaning the dryer vent is once a year. You can put a leaf blower in there and blow the crud out outdoors and scoop it up. With a vertical dryer vent that goes out through the attic and through the roof, I think maybe twice a year is a better idea because of gravity. Again, that lint will fall down behind the dryer and accumulate there more quickly than it might with a horizontal dryer vent. So you need to, it's a pain in the neck, I know, to pull the dryer out and check behind the wall, but you'll find that in a vertical dryer vent, all that lint will accumulate just behind the dryer and not up above, and you can suck that out, as I say, twice a year, because you want to make sure your dryer is operating efficiently, since most people use electricity to dry with, and it's very expensive. So,
I was just thinking about this. You know, when you've got a vent going out for, like, in the upper level for a washer and dryer,
yeah,
and then you've got another vent going out for your fan in your bathroom,
yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, when that seemed a little look kind of bad, all of a sudden you got more vents popping up on the side of the house now with all these openings and stuff.
If
like
you
that,
have or, to, you have to, yeah.
Right, unless going through the, would that be better just going through the into the attic?
Well, if all things being equal, it's better to have a vent on the side of the house because it's much less susceptible to leaking because it's vertical. Where roof vents are horizontal because they're on the surface of the roof. So, yeah, I mean, if you know, you're right. I mean, there might be two or three sticking out of the side of the house, but you can paint them to match the house. So if you have a choice, everything else is equal, it's better to go sideways. It's easier to install and less leak prone, kind of, is that's the situation. Anyway, time for a break. We'll be right back. 719-473-1240 right here on Around the House. Give us a call. I want to talk to you about Click Heating and Air. They give a special deal if you mention the Around the House program. Only $59 to get your AC checked for this season. That's the best deal in town. It's a tune-up of your air conditioning system. They'll check everything for just $59. 719-782-5425. And if you don't have central air at your house, well, it's time to get central air now because it adds real value to your home. And you get to create your own indoor air environment with central air at your house. Close the windows and snuggle up in a cool house, and you'll love it. And realtors agree, and appraisers, that it adds real value. They have special deals now on central air at Click. As a matter of fact, they have a cool interactive website. That's why they call it Click. You go in there, and three or four clicks, you can just figure out what the AC system's going to cost at your house. And they have special around-the-house pricing. Click Heating and Air. ClickHeatingandAir.com or 719-782-5425.
From your faucet to your furnace and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back. 24 before the top of the hour. Don't forget the podcast of the program. We're going back virtually a year now at krdo.com/radio, or my site is just as easy to click on, listen to podcasts at aroundthehouse.com. And my old iHeart show, there are, if you go online to the, what's the app on the iPhone? Just
like an Apple or?
Yeah, an Apple. There's a little purple, I can picture the icon there. What's, anyway.
Podcasts.
Podcast on Apple Podcast. Anyway, we have iHeart shows of the Round the House going back about 2015, 2016. So hundreds of shows there. And the last year right here at KRDO.com. And so we'd love it if you'd download, as many of you are, download the podcast. We're glad you're doing that. I'm setting records every day here at the station for podcast downloading. And Chris will put today's show up within a couple hours after we go off the air. Joe says, there's water inside my fridge all of a sudden. This is a day for fridge emails, I guess. What do you think's going on? Well, the most likely thing, Joe, is that the freezer drain is plugged up. Now, when, you know, if you're my age, you may remember your mom had to defrost the refrigerator. Do you remember that, Chris, at all, by hand, defrosting?
Oh, yeah.
And
I still have a freezer at home. We have to get the old box fan out to try and dry all, get all the water out there too.
You know, those older refrigerator compressors, they can last 50 or 60 years. Yeah, if you they're very reliable. Anyway, so hand defrosting like your mom did. My mother would like you say a fan and put pots and pans under there to catch the water. It was such a mess. Well, now we have frost-free refrigerators, but there's still a defrosting cycle that goes on. You just can't see it, and it's all automatic. Every 6 or 8 hours, a frost-free refrigerator will shut down, and there's some heaters in there that kind of warm up the back of the freezer, and all that frost melts and turns into water and dribbles down to the bottom of the refrigerator, and that drain system can plug up with pieces of bread or broccoli or whatever's in your freezer, or just ice crystals that are stuck in there. So you need to kind of take a look at that system, and you'd use a hair dryer or something to get rid of whatever. What I've used very successfully in the past is simply a turkey baster with some warm, not hot, but warm soapy water in there, and just you'll find the drain hole in the back of the freezer. You might have to remove the back panel. It depends on what model you have, but you'll see a hole back there that's obviously a drain hole, and stick the turkey baster in there and blast some warm, soapy water through there, and it'll unblock it, and you'll be all set. Whatever's in there will be shoved down into the tray. There's usually a tray of some kind under the refrigerator that collects the water that eventually evaporates. So that's kind of how that goes, and that's probably what's going on. If it's all of a sudden water in the bottom of your freezer compartment being there, it's because that drain system has plugged up. Another cause, but very much less likely, is that your ice maker is leaking. But you can isolate that relatively easily. But I think the most likely cause, Joe, in your situation, is that drain being plugged up. Let's see here. Here's an interesting one from Fred. I bought a carbon monoxide alarm. The directions say to place it not less than 4 inches from the ceiling. That seems too high to me. Where do you think it should go? I like it lower. Why do we care what the carbon monoxide level is near the ceiling? That's not where your body and head are when you're sleeping. It's more important to know what's near the floor, your head level, so to speak, when you're sleeping is about 18 inches or to 24 inches off the floor. So, and because the heat vents are in the floor, it's more likely that the carbon monoxide will be detected lower sooner than it might be detected higher. Now, I don't want to interfere. The manufacturer's directions are supersede my opinion, but I'll tell you what I've done at my house. I've plugged in a Nighthawk carbon monoxide detector in an outlet in the hallway near my bedrooms. Outlets are roughly 13 inches off the floor. And so I'm measuring carbon monoxide where it's most likely to occur. Carbon monoxide is a little bit lighter than plain air, not very much, just a few percent lighter than air. So it doesn't tend to go right to the ceiling. It's kind of a little, kind of everywhere, if you get what I mean. So when you're sleeping, you and the kids are sleeping, that's when you're most vulnerable to carbon monoxide poisoning, as you well know. So I like to measure it down where I am when I'm sleeping. Now, again, the manufacturer's directions will supersede me. So I guess what I'm telling you, Fred, is I'd put, if you want to satisfy that, put it up near the ceiling and put one down low. I think I would rather measure the carbon monoxide on the lower part of the home. Now, if you're, as many new homes do, if your heat comes out of the ceiling, well, now it's a different discussion, because if there's carbon monoxide from the furnace, it'll be up near the ceiling. Builders, to satisfy the smoke detector and carbon monoxide requirements, usually use combo detectors with both detectors inside that one body, you know, up near the ceiling. It'll say carbon monoxide on it, and it'll be a smoke detector also, and that satisfies the legal requirements. But again, I like to measure low, so high and low, yeah, go for it. Smoke, of course, accumulates near the ceiling first. That's why the smoke detectors are up there. So I hope hasn't been confusing, but all things being equal, I'm just telling you what I do at my house. I want to measure it down near the floor. Now, having said all that, firefighters have told me, and they're the folks that should know, that most carbon monoxide poisoning incidents come out of the garage. That's where almost, because furnaces, it's rare anymore for furnaces to fail. Theoretically, your gas fireplace or your furnace could fail at any time, so you got to have detectors in the house. But if you can call it good news, most CO, which is carbon monoxide, most of those incidents come because people leave the door open, they idle the car in the morning in the garage, and that carbon monoxide seeps into the house, and that's where most of the alarms are. The days of those hokey, dangerous space heaters are pretty much gone from our lives. That's where a lot of this came from, faulty space heaters with a plugged-up flue and that sort of thing. Those are gone. But the carbon monoxide detectors is one of those rules that have saved a lot of lives. So
that's especially why it's important to have the garage there fully insulated, especially when you've got a bedroom right over the garage. That's vitally important, especially.
Right. Well, the building code, Chris, requires, if there's bedrooms over the garage, excuse me, the garage ceiling has to be a special thicker drywall to prevent fire damage. And yeah, you're right. And that's another reason, by the way, and I haven't talked about this for a long time. If you're in a house built in the 50s and 60s, you may have a heat vent in the garage. These were common, and I still see those. That is illegal as all sin, and not just from a code standpoint, from a common sense standpoint. You don't want to suck not only carbon monoxide, but gasoline, paint thinner, insecticide fumes into the house, into the bedroom area. So if you have a heat vent from your furnace system in your garage, it's convenient, no doubt about it. Keeps the garage a little warmer, but it is illegal. You want to block that up permanently with sheet metal or sheet rock or something, because that's as you indicate, Chris, the garage environment has to be totally isolated from the living space in the house. So anyway, if you have a heat vent in the garage, do not continue to use it. Plug it up.
And don't,
before and it causes and, problems.
What's and that? Don't put your dryer vents that way either.
What's that?
And don't put your dryer vents
no,
that
no,
way
you
either.
Can't. No, dryer vents, same idea. If you vent it into the garage, not only is it an atmospheric connection with the house, living space, but it also gets all that lint in your in your car and your engine and your workbench and everything, no dryers have to vent outside, no crawl spaces, no nylon stockings, bucket of water, garages, dryers must vent outside. That is a hard and fast rule. 719-473-1240, and we'll be back right after this, right here and around the house. I'm going to ask you a question. Be honest now. How does your house look? Does it look up to date and modern and you're glad to come home at night and see that beautiful house? Or is it kind of tired and dreary looking and does it need a facelift? Well, if it does, I'll bet it does. You want to call Dutch's Home Improvement, 719-392-1369. Start with new windows, because they say, you know, windows, your eyes are your windows to the soul. I think that's the expression. Well, the windows give away a lot about your house in terms of how modern and up-to-date it looks. So new energy-efficient windows will save you money summer and winter with Dutch's Home Improvement. They have the best installers and best brands of new vinyl windows. New siding and, say, a new front door, then your house will look more modern, up-to-date. You'll be proud to come home, and your neighbors will be envious. Trust me. Dutch's Home Improvement. 719-392-1369, 392-1369, or DutchessHomeImprovement.com.
From your roof to your foundation and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Yeah, Terry sent me an email here. I haven't talked about this for a while, so I'm anxious to get to this email here. I have some oil spots in the driveway I need to remove. You've mentioned this before on the radio, but I can't remember the details. Well, this is one of those things, kind of like woodpeckers, that generates lots of feedback, lots of suggestions over the years. The good old-fashioned way to get rid of oil and grease spots by dissolving them and then absorbing them. And the way you do that is use mineral spirits or goof off, which they're kind of the similar. They dissolve oil and grease. Apply the mineral spirits to the oil or grease stains and then grind up kitty litter to absorb the stain that's slowly dissolving. I like the clay-based generic cheap kitty litter to do this. And you have to do this, maybe a couple of times, and that usually will get the stain. If it doesn't disappear, it'll be very faint, and you can sprinkle some powdered cement right on top of that faint stain. Some people swear by the application of full-strength liquid dishwashing detergent like Joy or Dawn. Or I've even had people, you know, those jelly-like hand cleaners that auto mechanics use, like I think one's called Goop, G-O-O-P, of putting that on the stains and then power washing that off is another suggestion. There are also so-called oil eaters that are based on the bacteria technology they use when they spill oil in the Gulf of Mexico, and that's kind of thing that have microbes in that eat oil stains. You could try one of those. I don't have a name in my head. I used to. I'll think about it. It'll pop in to the old brain here in a minute. But anyway, you can look for those online. When you get that, so back to my method about dissolving and then absorbing the stain with kitty litter. Once that's done, you've done it two or three times, and the stain is still a little faint, you can put the liquid detergent right on there and power wash and scrub with some hot water. That's the next step. So dissolve it, absorb it, and then clean it with something, a soapy solution. And then you can, again, put some powdered cement on there and kind of brush it in with a stiff-bristled broom or brush. And that completes the job. The powdered cement will blend it in with its surroundings. So that's kind of the basics of getting oil and grease stains off of the driveway or other surfaces. If you have stains from the rust, iron-containing fertilizer, there'll be rusty stains on your sidewalk or driveway. You could, if you want to power wash those, that's fine, or scrub them with a little CLR. That might help also. But eventually the sun will oxidize those and they'll just disappear. So I'll leave that up to you. If you don't have a power washer at your house, I would get one. They're good to have for things just like we're discussing here. 719-473-1240. Missy says we're finishing the basement, 600 square foot room. How many heat vents do we need? That's an interesting question. At the very least, Missy, you should install one over each door and window opening on the outside walls. I think in a 600 square foot room, three or four would be about right, but that depends. We always say that depends. What's it depend on? Well, you know, the exterior walls, whether versus, you said it's in the basement. Now, the exterior walls maybe have dirt behind them, or they may be exposed to the air. If you have a walkout basement on a sloping lot, these exterior walls may be exposed to the air, the winter cold winter air, in which case there's an additional heat load there. So you might want to put an extra vent in. If on the other hand, it's soil completely surrounding the walls of your new basement room, then three or four vents for sure. You want to, as I say, put them over the cold spots, which one over each window is a minimum. If there's a patio door in there, you should put one over the patio door. And you know, the final arbiter on this is, of course, is your HVAC company. But that's kind of the, I'm giving you some kind of general guidelines here. But the most important part of this conversation is return air. And this, I see this all the time. The main reason basements are so cold in the wintertime is the lack of return air grills or the position of return air grills. And what I see so often, it just drives me bananas, is to see the heat vents on the ceiling in the basement, which is fine, and then the return air vent on the ceiling also. So what happens is the heat comes roaring out of the heat vents in the ceiling and scoots right across the ceiling and back into the cold air return also on the ceiling. So that results in stratified air, where we have layers of warm air near the ceiling and colder as we get down to floor levels. So we need to put at least two return air grills in a basement finish. And your heating contractor can decide where those come from, but there has to be return air grills at floor level. So you can picture what happens is the heat comes out of the ceiling heat vents and scoots right across down and across you and the furniture into the return air grill. So it makes a much more comfortable basement without stratified air. So return airs, don't neglect them. Sometimes I'll see a basement that's finished off with no return air grills at all, which means you get absolutely no heat circulation whatsoever. So cold basements, you don't want a cold basement. You spend all that money refinishing your basement, putting the new room in. You want to make sure it heats adequately. So in your case, Melissa, three or four ceiling vents for minimum, and one over at least over each window and patio door. So, but consult your HVAC contractor for that. But that's kind of the general guideline here. I'd probably go for four, because once you sheetrock, you can't put any more in, and you're done. So there you go. I hope that's helpful to you to have a nice, warm, cozy basement this coming winter. Chris Moore, thanks for your help in the control room. As always, you'll have the podcast up within a couple of hours. We hope you have a wonderful week. Enjoy this beautiful weather. God bless. See you next time right here on Around the House.